You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome back. The boys are going to be breaking it all down. Colt Molesky, Trey Flynn, bring you another Locked On Wolves podcast. And Trey, I'm in a different spot. I don't know how many people know this, but I took a job at KSFY in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So I actually was moving yesterday, all day yesterday, moving all the stuff. So I'm reporting live from Sioux Falls today for the first pod ever in South Dakota. How do you like them apples?
Look at Colin, guys. He's on the up and up. Congratulations. I couldn't think of a person more deserving of that position. He's got his own apartment. He's living life in Sioux Falls. Expect a visit from Trey over here, and we can get this live pod coming fairly soon.
I would love that. And you know what? It's just nice to be adulting. It's nice to be a big boy now.
Yeah,
got my own place. Got a full time job. This is my first full time job, Trey.
I love it. These are the things that we've been working all our lives for. So I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I am excited to be bringing content to you guys from a different place, because everyone knows, like, I can't quit this show. I just can't. It's my own personal heroine. There's no way I could give this up, so I'm going to keep doing the show despite the new job and all of it, and I'm going to keep doing the show despite games like last night's game. And we should probably talk about the about the Timberwolves' loss to the Pacers. It was their second road game on a road back-to-back, which is always tough. But they lose 122-115 to the Pacers. And I didn't watch it at the time. I went back because I have this beautiful thing called NBA League Pass, so I can go back and watch the games. It really is one of my favorite purchases of, I think, my entire life is NBA League Pass. And so I went and watched the game later that night. But last night during the game, I was unpacking still, and I had the pleasure of getting just depressing texts from you, Trey, throughout the game. And it really gave me a sense of what the mood was around this game, despite a terrific performance from Towns.
Yeah, Towns, like, right off the bat, man, I was excited. Like, Indiana knows how to show out for a random basketball game, like, on a Thursday night. Like, the crowd there was insane. It seems like it's a pretty joyous time to be an Indiana Pacers fan. And they've gone from having, like, Paul George to Victor Oladipo to now, I guess, Bogdanovich, who is their savior. So they're a pretty excited place. But after that first quarter, man, I was so pumped. Like, Karl-Anthony Towns, 23 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, the highest scoring total of his first quarter in his career. He was 8 of 14 from the field, got to the line 8 times. He was 2 of 3 from the three-point line. Man, I was living life. He had the highest plus minus on both teams. And everybody on the Pacers just looked kind of average. And so I was kind of like, okay, we got this. This is in the bag. And maybe it was just fate that you kind of had to miss that live, Colton, because it took a downturn pretty quickly.
What is up with this, by the way? We're going to get into a lot of what happened in this game, what went wrong for the Timberwolves. And then it's Friday, so we're going to take a look at the weekend slate quick before we head out here. But first of all, I just want to get to what's going on over this last couple of games. 40 and 35 points in the last two first quarters here for the Timberwolves, starting out really hot. Usually when they struggle in a game, you usually see it pretty early on, but right away in those first quarters, they looked like they were ready to wallop both the Hawks and the Pacers. I don't like that they start out really strong and then just wither right away in that second quarter. That's a little concerning for me.
Well, they're doing the right things in terms of letting Karl-Anthony Towns get the bulk of the shot attempts. Like, our idea of minimizing Andrew Wiggins' shots that shouldn't, you know, happen when he's contested, and limiting, you know, Jeff Teague dribbling too much and trying to get the ball movement to increase, that definitely has been happening. In Karl-Anthony Townsend's game, shot 29 times, and that's a lot. I think that even might be his second highest or his career highest, and it is a lot of shot attempts. And he got to the line 13 times in this game, so there were some definite positives. You can kind of see where this game was going. The trajectory was going towards Towns, and all the signs are pointing in the right direction. If it wasn't for Bojan Bogdanovic. Essentially, like, the Hawks had John Collins and Trae Young, and now we have Bogdanovic for the Indiana Pacers. So, like, there are these players that are stepping up when they don't really need to step up, when we need players to step up. And it's just not, it's not going in the right direction for us, Cole, and it just didn't happen the way we wanted it to.
Looking back at it, maybe we should have seen this coming. Funny stat from Towns. He has played 8 games with 0 days of rest, 8 back-to-backs this season, and he's averaging 31 points in those games.
Ooh, that's a good stat.
Isn't that crazy?
That is insane.
Stud.
I mean, he's playing outside of his mind, man. Like, in the past three games, he's averaging 37.7 points per game, 60.6% from the field on 22 shot attempts, 8 threes a game, 47.8% from the arc, and he's getting to the line 11 times. Now, the most alarming part of the past three games is that he's only shooting 66.7% from the free throw line on 11 attempts, which is not a norm, but neither are his numbers right now, so I'm not too sure what's going on, because he's also averaging 18.7 rebounds, 4 assists, which is definitely the most highlighting number on there offensively, and a little bit over a block. He's also averaging over 5 fouls a game, 5.3 fouls in the past 3 games, which is the biggest. I mean, we keep talking about this over and over again each podcast, and I can't really fault Towns too much, because he's playing at, like, a high we've never seen him before, and he's also playing like he's already Anthony Davis. So there's some really high expectations for him right now. But just the one small thing I can pick out from his, you know, craziness over the past 3 games and in those back-to-backs that you're noting are just his high foul numbers. And I understand it's going to happen for playing high minutes, but he's got to watch out for that, man. He's not going to get the calls he wants anytime soon.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that with you, and we're going to get to some of the backcourt stuff, too, that we were alluding to headed into this game. But first, let's take a quick break for some sponsors. Colt Molesky, Trey Flynn, talking about how insane Towns was. Before we move on to some other Timberwolves players from this game, I just wanted to ask you, Trey, where do we stand on this foul situation for Towns? Because it's gotten to the point, I don't want to beat it to death, but it's gotten to the point where I'm starting to get a little more concerned than I was. Because if you'll remember, my original stance on it was that I really don't think that it's easy to officiate Towns, and it's not really easy to make the right calls or to even know what calls to make in some spots, because he's so versatile and he's such a big dude and plays in so many spots on the floor. And so since maybe in a lot of refs' minds, he's not to that superstar like LeBron James type player yet, where you just give him the calls because you know they probably should go in his favor anyways, because he's just the better player in 99% of the possessions that he's a part of. And so since he's not in that category yet, I think maybe he gets kind of hosed by some calls, and it's not his fault necessarily, and it's not the ref's fault necessarily, it's just because he's really hard to officiate. Is that still the stance that we should take, or do we need to go a little more towards Towns is playing kind of undisciplined right now?
Maybe a little of both. I think it's more so that he needs to start watching how other really talented high IQ centers play in the league. For example, Al Horford is a guy that gets, you know, his opponent in a lot of foul trouble very early. Towns has had his trouble against him this season, just in terms of fouls, and he's been doing that throughout his whole career, Al Horford has. So if Towns can start watching guys like him or Rudy Gobert and trying to see what exactly that they're doing to try to throw off their opponents and try to get them on the bench as soon as possible, I think that's the right move. And I think the coaching staff has to know this. It's the biggest problem with Towns this season is just getting in foul trouble, and they got to do something about it. He either has to watch his – because funnily enough – Towns hasn't really found – I don't even think Towns knows how big he is. And so, like, oftentimes you'll see him throwing his arms around, and it's almost like he doesn't know how to control his body all the way. And so now he's trying to figure out how does he get out of foul trouble. The first thing he's got to do is realize that he can't throw his body around like a point guard does, right? You can't do that. And, you know, that's been a big issue with him this season. A guy that does that a lot is Kelly Olynyk for the Miami Heat and Boston Celtics, who instead of and when he learned that he was doing that so much, he started taking more charges, and now Olynyk leads the NBA in charges. And so that's something I'd like to see Towns do, is if he knows that he's a little bit flimsy, maybe adapt to it and know that the refs know that you're flimsy and just try to get more charges out of the big men. Because there's not really much he can do under the basket. People are taking advantage of him on the defensive end, and he throws his elbows or arms around, and then it just looks like he's fouling other players. And so that's one thing to watch out for, and he just needs to watch more film because it's obviously an issue. And the number one thing I noted from last night on NBA Twitter for Minnesota Timberwolves, besides just depression, was that was essentially that Towns needs help. And if Towns goes out of the game, we don't really have a guy to step up. And as much as we both think Derrick Rose had a great season, you can't rely on a guy who barely has a knee. And, I mean, I guess this is where we can talk about Andrew Wiggins in a second, but there's really not another guy to turn to, and it's honestly pretty sad for Towns. It's a very difficult time.
Yeah. Just going back to the fouls real quick, I think it kind of sets the tone a little bit for the team as well. I mean, if you look in, obviously, because he's a part of the team, his stats are going to affect some of these team stats. But I think that it might set it a little bit. You saw this last night. Teague had 5 fouls. Taj Gibson had 4. It kind of sets a little bit of the tone, too, when you're getting Towns irritated and upset and getting him high in the high foul range. And then maybe you've got other teammates getting a little fiery at the refs, or maybe you've got other teams playing a little wonky because they're seeing these fouls rack up. I don't know, but all I know is in January and February, Towns is averaging nearly 4 fouls per game, and the Timberwolves are averaging over 20 personal fouls per game as a team in those months when Towns' personal foul rate is through the roof. And so those are kind of correlating a little bit, and I feel like that's kind of the next level for him, right? That's the next level of leadership, is to control that stuff better, I think. Well, and so now he's taken over games, and now you need to be the guy who's setting the tone for teammates as well.
For sure. And I have a quick stat for you that's fairly interesting. Karl Anthony Towns is currently leading the NBA in personal fouls in general, not just for centers, but all players. He has 227 personal fouls this season. Second on that list is Jaren Jackson Jr., which has been his biggest problem as a rookie. And I guess the biggest thing to note there is that Jaren Jackson Jr. is a rookie. So, like, I think that that's, like, a normal problem for rookies to try to figure out how to play on the defensive end, because that's the biggest – there's the biggest lapse in players' games between college and the NBA is the defensive end under the basket, especially. And then last season, the player that led the NBA in fouls was Karl Anthony Towns with 285. And second was Julius Randle, third being Chris Middleton, 4 being Andre Drummond, 5 being Dwight Howard. So, like, the normal names that you do see. And this is the biggest point. This is why I'm bringing this up. He's led the NBA in fouls the past 2 seasons. In 2016 to 2017, the leading fouler in the NBA was DeMarcus Cousins with 278 fouls. And so when me and Colton used that example about 5-6 podcasts ago of Towns essentially being Cousins, getting called for fouls a lot, that has nothing to do with more so personality. It more so has to do with not knowing how to use your body. And DeMarcus Cousins would flail 100% of the time under the basket. And you see Towns doing that a lot. And it just does not work in their favor. I don't know when it ever worked. I don't know if it worked in college for them. I don't know if it worked in high school. Maybe DeMarcus Cousins didn't know how to use his body that well in Sacramento and New Orleans during that season, too. But it's so apparent and obvious that it's becoming a real, real issue. And it hasn't just been fouls for Towns this season, even though I like, and this is why I'm not going to critique this too much, I like that Towns has definitely upped his game in facilitating this year. But he's also leading the NBA in turnovers this year for centers. So that's something to look out for, too. Like, he's has a ton of turnovers this season. He's actually bottom 3. He's the third worst, then it's Joel Embiid, then it's Nikola Jokic. And obviously those are 3 names you want to be surrounded around if you want to become a better passer in this league, because right behind Towns is Julius Randle, who's an amazing passer. So that's something to note, too, is that that might mean that Towns is just trying to get better at passing the ball, which is a great thing. But he's got to watch out for turnovers, and he's got to watch out for fouls, because these fouls are really going to nip him in the butt over the next few years.
Yeah, those are some great stats, Trey. It shows that there's still some work to be done, even as good as Towns is. There's still some polishing to do on his game. Still some stuff that he needs to take care of on his game. I wanted to get to the other side of this game that was not as pretty as Towns was against the Pacers. And this was just the backcourt for the Timberwolves. And we talked about this the other day going into this game. We highlighted that the backcourt would make or break this game for the Timberwolves. And the point guards combined for only 25 points between three players. Jeff Teague didn't make it back for this game. And he had 13. Jones had 2 points. Derrick Rose had 10. So 25 points between those three guys. And maybe the more concerning stat is that they combined for 8 assists, Trey. 8 assists between those three players. Really rough night just from every perspective from the point guards. I mean, only Teague got to the free throw line. He had 7 free throw attempts. Jones and Rose both didn't get to the free throw line. None of these guys hit any threes. Just really, really tough night for all of the point guards, both facilitating and creating offense, and they all combined for 7 personal fouls as well. So, tough night.
Yeah, well, it's hard to you know, get assists when you have guys like Josh Okogie, Andrew Wiggins not making shots, like, in your starting lineup. And I think, and Colton, I kind of want to transition this conversation in a second, and I think I can try to do it smoothly as possible, but Jeff Teague had a okay game for his first game back. I'm not angry about it. He was 4-for-9, 13 points, 5 assists. The 5 turnovers he had is understandable. He's a little wishy-washy coming back from an injury. That's not a big deal. 6 rebounds, 2 on the defensive boards, which is a good sign. A block and a steal. So all around, a fairly okay game for Jeff Teague. Josh Okogie, not so much in the defensive end. He was kind of taken over. Derrick Rose looked still hampered on the back end when he came off the bench, so I'm not going to critique him too much. Ryan Saunders has to see this and immediately look at Andrew Wiggins, because all I've heard this season is that point Wiggins is like the new point guard of the Timberwolves. Like, if you look at Timberwolves fandom on NBA Twitter, like, they're all very excited about this idea that Andrew Wiggins can be a point guard. They're essentially looking at him like Brandon Ingram. They want him to pass the ball more. Andrew Wiggins off the ball, I'm going back to Doris Burke, does nothing. Literally stands there, does not move. I don't know if it's a position coach problem. I'm not sure if it's a front office problem, not giving him the right resources for someone to tell him about this. I don't know who the video coordinator is for the Minnesota Timberwolves, but if they're hiring, I might get a new job too, Colton, because this is ridiculous. Because somebody needs to show Andrew Wiggins what he's doing on a night-to-night basis, standing off the ball with no movement whatsoever. Because as much as I do want to blame Jeff Teague, I can't give him too much flack in this situation when nobody's moving on the court and you look to your second best player, who's supposed to be your second best player, and he's just standing there in the corner waiting for Jeff Teague to ultimately throw him the ball and miss a contested three. So it's just not worth it. And so I think that this is this game is a good signifier for what maybe should happen and what maybe the Timberwolves should try out, since they're probably not going to make the playoffs now with these 2 games they lost, most likely. Maybe bring Andrew Wiggins off the bench, and you can keep talking about point guards, Cole. I definitely want to do that, but I just think a good idea that we've both kind of talked about this season is bench Wiggins and just kind of see what he looks like as a 6-man, because I think that our bench has gotten so based around Derrick Rose and the hopeful possibility that guys like Anthony Tolliver will make threes, or that Tyus Jones won't have an inconsistent game on both ends. Maybe having Andrew Wiggins and his scoring input at certain times in certain games will be more helpful off the bench when you can lead the starting offense around Towns and Sarge and Jeff Teague.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I agree with that. I like it. And I like the idea of getting the ball in Wiggins' hands more just to try and get his level of involvement up, whatever it takes, really, I think would be a good move. It's honestly depressing, though, that this is what we have to talk about. Is that, how do we get this guy to engage? And I think the Timberwolves would be wise to hire you as the film coach and just be like, all right, Wiggins, look at right here. Look at this. Look how everyone else is moving, and you're just in the corner. What the hell happened there, huh? What's going on? Let's move around here, Sonny boy. Come on.
It's basketball 101, man. Basketball 101. It's terrible.
Just find the open. What he should do is he should just watch tape of Klay Thompson.
Yes.
For just lock him in for like a 3-day span. Just lock him in a film room with some food, some water, and Klay Thompson tape. And have him just watch for like 72 hours.
Yeah, 100%. I would lock him in a room and just show him people that make so much more less money than he does with so much more output and production and just be like, what are you doing? Like, there are guys making $8 to $12 million right now that are light years ahead of you in off-the-ball movement and just in production this season. It is really, really bad. And, I mean, I could go really deep in these Andrew Wiggins stats, but, I mean, every Timberwolves analyst or podcaster today is going to do that. So I don't really feel like it's a little depressing. But this game, to kind of go off that tangent of Andrew Wiggins, got a little messy in that second quarter where the Timberwolves looked like they just gave up. They gave Andrew Wiggins 8 shot attempts. He made 1 shot. And then Bojan Bogdanović took over, having the game of his life. Funnily enough, in a game where Karl-Anthony Towns has one of the best games of his life, too. And it just ended up not falling in Minnesota's hands, unfortunately. And while I would love to blame one or two players in this situation, I think this was a team effort loss, really. I really don't. I think that this came down to the whole team just not finishing at the end of these games. There was a terrible couple plays at the end of that fourth quarter. Ryan Saunders was trying to make bench. He was trying to send guys out from the bench into the free throw line to the starting lineup to mess around with the roster on the floor in the bottom 3 minutes. And he was like making the wrong calls and he had to send guys back and forth. It was just not a cohesive unit. And we looked a little flustered in a game where we needed to show why we're a playoff team. And it just did not, just did not end that way.
Yes, you're right. They look flustered from the coach all the way down to the last man on the bench. I will say this. I had an idea. I think it's a kind of a genius idea. No mean to pat myself on the back, but what if because John Wall's injured right now. Ooh. What if just for like 2 weeks we have Andrew Wiggins hang out with John Wall just so he sees what his future could be? If he hands down this not really giving a crap trajectory of a max player and just like, do you want to be this homeless looking guy who walks around in a tracksuit with Hennessy sticking out of his pocket, just kind of smashed and out of shape all the time? Is this what you want, Wiggins? Maybe John Wall can be like the Scared Straight TV show for Wiggins and actually get a little bit of a fire under his seat.
Dude, I totally thought you were going to take that the other way and say, maybe we should trade Andrew Wiggins this summer for John Wall and just try the Wall-Towns duo.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, man, this is a take. This is a take. We're going to either lose this podcast or become famous instantly.
No, I don't drink this early in the morning, Trey. I'm not John Wall.
Well, apparently, I mean, actually, this is a really good idea. Andrew Wiggins, this is what I'm talking about, though. He needs to see what the future Wiggins can hold, right? Like, he needs to look in the mirror and be like, what am I going to be? And are you going to be homeless John Wall? Or are you going to be someone that's playing like Tobias Harris currently in Philadelphia? Like, what are you going to do? Like, you have to try to step up from here on out. And it just seems like he needs a wake-up call. And I feel like we've been saying this during the Thibodeau era, and now we're saying it during the Saunders era. And now I'm thinking it's not maybe a coaching change that needs to happen, but it's just kind of like a wake me up. And maybe the wake me up is just bench Wiggins. And maybe that needs to be our new hashtag, Colton, hashtag bench Wiggins. And it's not to say that he sucks. It's essentially saying that he is getting too much freedom and he's not playing like a player that deserves that much freedom.
It'd be the ghost of All-Stars past. Patent that for me, Trey. Patent that for me.
Love that.
All right. We're going to get to a break for some sponsors before we talk about this weekend's basketball game. First, some sponsors. All right, before we head out here, Trey, we have to talk about this Wizards game. Speaking of John Wall, the Wizards game is going down this Sunday. Timberwolves' last road game before they head back here. And goodness gracious, it should be a win. It really has to be a win at this point. This is going to be, because if they go through this stretch with 3 losses and then they get to just a disgustingly brutal stretch, I think that really might be the end of that sizzling hope that we had a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. If they lose 3 games in a row, listeners, expect a hashtag tank podcast on Monday, because we'll be talking a lot about what the hell the Minnesota Timberwolves are going to be doing stuck in the middle of the standings in basketball purgatory. So for this Wizards game, I actually might be at this game, Colton. I haven't decided yet, but there is a chance that I'll be at this game. I am going to be a little bit nervous, though, because I have bad luck going to Washington Wizards games. It seems that never falls in my favor. So I'm a little nervous, but I would like to get a question in there to my boy Jeff Teague. I feel like me and him would really get along. So I'm ultimately
at some point this is going to turn into Stockholm syndrome and you're actually going to swing the other way and he's going to become your favorite player.
I hope so. Actually at this point, I might as well get a jersey cause I talk about him more than any player, but, all jokes aside, I actually probably will go to this game. I'm excited for the Wizards Wolves game. The Wizards are actually coming off a really, really good low-key win against the Brooklyn Nets, who have been playing like a legit playoff contender this season, in the Nets, not the Wizards. And Bradley Beal has been out of his mind. And if you're a listener and you haven't kept up with Bradley Beal, he is playing like James Harden from like 2 years ago. And that's a really good sign for Washington, their 25-year-old, who a lot of people think is older than that, but he's really young. Trevor Ariza had 23 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists in that game against Brooklyn. So I guess now we have to watch out for Trevor Ariza. I don't know what's up with all these small forwards who shouldn't be good at basketball anymore, and Bogdanović and Ariza, but I guess we have to watch out for these guys. And now they have Bobby Portis, and they have Jabari Parker off the bench. There are some interesting – and Thomas Bryant, who's turned himself into a legit center. There are some, like, interesting players on this Washington Wizards team. I'm intrigued to see the Troy Brown versus Josh Okogie matchup because I actually thought we were going to draft Troy Brown at one point. So I'm interested to see that. It'll be an intriguing game, Colton, and I'm actually leaning more towards a loss than a win in this one, and I hate myself for saying that, but that's just how I feel currently.
I don't like that Bradley Beal does weirdly well against the Timberwolves more often than not. I also don't like playing against Bradley Beal at all. I know I'm a Bradley Beal fanboy, but I can't remember if I pitched this to you or not, but I think that he's kind of a dark horse. If the Wizards were better, he would be an MVP candidate. He's kind of a dark horse MVP candidate anyways, because listen to this. When he's averaging through the season, he's averaging 25.7 points per game, which is great. But John Wall went down in early December, didn't he? Early December, late November.
Correct.
One of those two. And since then, December, 26.5 points per game, and he's averaging 5.4 assists per game. And then January, 27.6 points per game, 6.1 assists per game. February, 30.9 points per game, 6.8 assists per game. When John Wall is out, he shoots through the roof in not only points, but in assists. You look at the way he shoots the ball. 32% from three wasn't great in February, but 39% from three in January, 34% from three in December. He was shooting 47% from the field in December, 46% in January, 52% in February. This man is balling out and taking over the team. No John Wall is the best thing that ever happened to Bradley Beal.
I couldn't agree more, and I think he is a dark horse for an MVP candidate. If the Washington Wizards could somehow make the playoffs this season, I actually think that would be an argument that he'd be a top five candidate for that. It's interesting because I don't like to give LeBron James a lot of credit. I'm not a huge fan, but he has really changed the game into a positionless league where Bradley Beal 10 years ago would be strictly shooting from the perimeter, and how dare he make a pass to the cutter under the basket. So the fact that he is like playing this combo guard position is really, really cool to see. And you're seeing it all around the league, whether it's Devin Booker, James Harden, whomever. There's a lot of players that are passing the ball really efficiently and are getting to be the point guard in the full court that weren't allowed to do that a couple of years back because so many people were stuck in their old ways of wanting a 6'2", 6'3" point guard that could read the court really well. Now they're realizing even centers can read the court. So it's definitely changing the game, and Bradley Beal is a good example of that. Actually, he's a great example of that, and he's been playing fantastic. I'm very nervous for him. I'd even bring up Thomas Satoransky, who's been one of the more underrated, most improved players this season. Really good at defense. He's 6'7", shooting guard, swingman, plays point guard too. So he's great from 1 to 3. They've got a lot of interesting pieces and tools on this team. And I'd love to have Robert Covington back in this one, but I don't think we're going to get him yet. Because just for the length that Covington provides, the wing, Washington's so lengthy with all of their wings. They really just have a bunch of 6'7 to 6'9 guys that can spread it out, and they can all shoot pretty well. And unfortunately, with the John Wall stuff, Washington won't be good for a few years, like really good. But they got rid of the Otto Porter contract, and Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker seem to be filling in quite nicely. So this is going to be an interesting game. I am going to stick with Minnesota losing this one. I do think we lose three games in a row for these away games, unfortunately. And I think Bradley Beal does put up, 30-plus in this one.
This will be an interesting coaching game for Saunders, yeah, just because Portis is their center right now. They play a lot of small ball, and they're going to throw out a lot of lineups where there's just going to be a lot of forwards around Beal. And so how do they combat that, especially with maybe Derrick Rose still being banged up? Maybe you don't have as many point guards. How do you match the forward talent that the Wizards are going to throw out there? And how do you match the small ball that they're going to throw out there? And it's going to be interesting because there's a way where you could see maybe they play a little more bully ball and play really big and try and just force the Wizards into some sloppy possessions from way outside because they can't get into the paint. Or maybe they try and match their small ball with small ball and match their pace with pace. It'll be interesting. This will be one of the more interesting matchups just coaching-wise for Saunders, I think. Because it's not as obvious what you should do.
Yeah, actually, I think I might piggyback what you said earlier this season to do. I would try to counteract this lineup because I don't think we have enough lengthy, fast, quicker guys at this point in time. I would try to counteract this roster and just start Towns, Sarge, Tolliver, Okogie, and Teague. And then bring off the bench, you can have Gibson, Wiggins, and Rose. Because I think if they can counteract this roster with some more longer, tougher guys and slow down the pace in the half court, I think they'll be able to pull out a win. But I just don't think Ryan Saunders is going to do that. I think it would be the biggest headline news if he benched Wiggins. I mean, this is the move I would make, but it's something you brought up earlier this season, I believe, Colin, which is a really good point against these smaller ball teams to counteract them. And I think that's what would be an interesting move here.
The problem is that when you're an interim head coach, the waves that you make by benching Wiggins, I don't think is something that you want, unfortunately. Whether it's the right move or not, I just don't know if you want to make that move, especially if you think you can maybe play for yourself into the head coaching spot. I don't know. We'll see how it goes down. I'm with Trey, though. I just don't like this situation. It seems like a big trap game, and I don't like the fact that Bradley Beal, that they could be winning, and then all of a sudden Bradley Beal puts up 20 points in a quarter. And there's just not a guy on this roster right now that can stop him because he's too smart. No offense, Okogie, but he's just too smart to get slowed down by Josh Okogie. He has too many tricks in his bag. And I don't know if Wiggins is going to match his energy level. And so they don't have a guy for him. They just don't have a guy that can guard Beal. And so that's why I'm worried about him because he can put up 20 in a quarter. And there's not anybody that the Timberwolves are going to be able to throw on him. And if you double him, then you're going to leave guys like Bobby Portis, Trevor Ariza, Jabari Parker. I mean, these are maybe not the first guys that you pick if you're drafting for 2K, but these are not guys that I want to leave open either. And so it's a tough spot for the Timberwolves when they don't have a shooting guard or a forward that I can really trust on Beal, which stinks. But that's why I think they probably lose this game.
Yeah, I'm gonna second that. I do think they lose this game. The only way, again, I'll reemphasize this. If there's listeners thinking, oh, Towns is playing out of his mind right now, all he has to do is score 50 for us to win this game because we're playing a small ball lineup. You're wrong. Okay, we just watched him destroy the Indiana Pacers, have the best quarter of his career in 23 points in the first quarter of a game, and it didn't scare the Pacers one bit. They weren't fearful of Towns. They weren't fearful of this Minnesota Timberwolves team. They believed in their unity. And the Washington Wizards, in case nobody's been watching, have chosen not to tank. And their front office is like, our roster thinks that they're still going to make the playoffs. And so this team will be vying for a playoff spot, even though I pretty much think they're out of it. They're still going to be fighting for one. So expect a team that's not willing to lose easily. So, yeah, I have Minnesota losing in this one, too, unfortunately. And you can expect most likely a tanking podcast next week if that doesn't end on happening.
Yeah, these is dark times. These is dark times. That's what I want. This is a bummer. After getting so excited, this is a little bit of a bummer. But hey, you know what? We'll be here for the good and the bad, and we'll be bringing you all the action from the weekend on Monday with another Locked On Wolves podcast. But as for right now, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the show. Everyone, have a fantastic weekend.
You are Locked On Timberwolves. your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.